Does the U.S. Constitution need an update? Some Ohio Republicans think so, and members of the Ohio House of Representatives have joined legislators in other parts of the country to push for a convention of states. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss the efforts to amend the Constitution are Northern Kentucky University Chase College of Law Associate Dean for Faculty Development and Professor of Law, John Bickers. Thanks for being here, John.
My pleasure.
And University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Political Science, David Niven. Welcome back, David.
Thank you, Lucy.
John, first explain what exactly is a convention of states and what does it take for one to happen?
It takes a call by two-thirds of the states or two-thirds of Congress to assemble a convention, and what the Constitution provides in Article 5 is that they would be able to write amendments, which would then be subject to the ordinary amendment procedure. They would have to be approved by three-quarters of the states.
Okay. So this is getting together to write those amendments if you have enough people supporting that idea, but then the states still have to ratify those amendments. David, how many states have voted so far to have a convention of states?
Well, there's a little bit of a dispute on that question, simply because a state legislature can vote to request this, and how long is that vote valid for? When does it expire? Well, there's no language in the Constitution that says when does it expire. So it's actually a bit of a controversial question of how many states have approved this, but the conventional thinking is there's still about six or seven states short of being even loosely able to claim that they're at the number required.
Okay, so in terms of kind of current votes to have a convention of states, they're not quite 30 yet.
Right, they're not there yet. But, you know, again, part of why this is going to be such a controversial concept is the Constitution just doesn't spell out, well, again, how long is that call for a convention valid? So California, for example, has called for a convention, but not in the modern political context. Then there's really no language about, well, how does it exactly take place? You know, who are the delegates? How many does each state get? That's not in the Constitution. Does each state get one vote or does each delegate get a vote? That's not in the Constitution. So this is controversial at so many levels, both its intent and how it would actually happen.
John, any idea why the Constitution is so silent on all this? Did the founders just never think this was going to happen?
I think the founders knew that if it did happen, then they couldn't really provide rules anyway. Remember, they had just come through the Constitutional Convention, and the Constitutional Convention was the same sort of organization. States, 12 states, called for revisions to the Articles of Confederation. And once they got in a small room in Philadelphia, they just wrote a new government and they changed everything. And they changed even the requirements for ratification. And so to say in the future, if you do this again, do it with these very careful rules, I think they realized if we do this, we're going to make up our own rules.
Hmm. We're talking about the push for a convention of states, what it would take to make it happen, and what it could mean. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. I want to note that we did reach out to Ohio Representative Reardon McLean, who introduced the plan in Ohio to call for a convention of states. He was not available for this interview. David, you mentioned that California has in the past called for this. Ohio's calling for it. Other states are now calling for it. All those states maybe have different goals for why they want this. Why, David, do supporters of this idea say it's needed now?
Well, the push for this now, as you mentioned, it's a Republican-backed measure. In fact, it's backed by some very, very conservative Republican think tanks and lobbying organizations. It's really about disruption. There's a lot of things they would like to change, and it would be a lot easier to do them if you had your hands on the Constitution. And if you think about what the administration presently is doing in Washington, how much easier the path would be when there's a notion, let's abolish a cabinet agency, or let's let's fundamentally reorient things. If the president actually had those powers, you know, it would change everything if these things were not only being done but being done legally. And so, you know, what is a constitutional convention? It's really an invitation to make massive changes, structural changes. And as John pointed out, this constitution that we live under was actually a product of, you know, a meeting that was called to amend the Articles of Confederation. And what they wound up with as an amendment was throwing out every single word of it.
Haven't Ohio lawmakers, though, said, David, that they're looking for term limits in Congress? And I know in the past there have been calls for a balanced budget amendment. I mean, are there specifics that have been floated for a convention of states?
Well, yes, you're absolutely right that specific issues get tossed about. But on specific issues, you could just propose a constitutional amendment. There's no particular reason to do it this way except to do big things and many things. You know, if you wanted one specific thing, like a balanced budget amendment, get it through Congress and send it to the states is a far faster, easier, simpler way. You know, this is, you know, to go to this effort and to you know, have to essentially go through it twice, because what you first have to do is get the states to agree to call the convention. And then anything that's produced from that convention has to then go back to the states and ultimately be ratified at an even higher standard. So this is the harder route, and it only makes sense to go the harder route if you want to do a lot of big things.
John, is it possible that a convention of states could change the rules for ratification, though?
Oh, absolutely. The Articles of Confederation, Article 13, said that the articles were creating a government that was perpetual, would last forever, and any change had to be unanimous. So when there were calls for amendments, Rhode Island didn't send any delegates, because Rhode Island took the position, we're not going to approve any changes, nothing is going to happen. When the group we now call the Framers got together in Philadelphia, they realized they weren't going to get unanimity, so they created a new standard. It only takes 9 of 13, they said. And so one of the things we lose track of is that when George Washington became president, he spent over a year as the president of 12 states. I mean, for a couple of months, he was only the president of 11 states until North Carolina finally gave up and joined. But it took Rhode Island until a year into Washington's presidency. So you could have a group get together somewhere, pick a place, Kansas City, Denver, wherever, and they gather and they meet and they say, well, we're going to create a new government, one house of the legislature, a president for a 12-year term, and it only takes 20 states to ratify. And then the question is, what happens if they do that? If 20 states then ratify, do the other 30 just go along, or do they say, no, we're going to be separate countries now? That's the mystery of a convention.
And John, the U.S. has never had a convention of states before, if I understand correctly. Why do you think that is? Is it just because it's so hard to get so many states to agree?
Well, I think we've never had one since 1787, but I think 1787 was this. So I think we have a sample size of one. We saw what they did, and I think we haven't had one since because, as David points out, if you're looking for a change, we want to make alcohol illegal, or we want to make alcohol legal again, or we want to give women the right to vote, just do that. It's as hard as it sounds, it's much easier than conducting a full national discussion about whether to accept this new government.
David, critics of this idea have a lot of concerns. Talk about what some of those are.
Well, fundamentally, a concern would be a convention would put on the table the removal of rights. You know, we take, you know, as almost, you know, guaranteed that nothing can, you know, limit our rights under the Bill of Rights. Well, a convention could question, do we need the First Amendment? So those sort of bedrock principles would then be put up for debate, discussion, and potentially imperiled. And a huge part of this, of course, is the degree to which they could do anything and everything. Every part of the Constitution, as John just suggested, you know, well, not only could they make a 12-year president, they could make a president for life in as a proposal. Now, in theory, of course, all that would then go back to the states and would need 3/4 of the states to ratify. But John is right. When the Articles of Confederation were, you know, in effect amended, they started by saying, we're not going to follow the rules for amending the Articles of Confederation. And they just started all over again. I can tell you one thing from personal experience. We actually hold a constitutional convention in my American politics class. And I can tell you the array of ideas that come forward, you know, don't fit any one category. They don't fit in any particular box. You put people in a room and say, your job is to think of things to change the Constitution. They're going to think of a lot of things to change the Constitution.
John, David was just talking about this idea of president for life. You mentioned president for 12 years. You know, President Trump has talked about how people have told him they'd love to see him serve a third term. Do you think that's something that could, you know, be an outcome of this if there were a convention of states? And I know it's a, you know, we'll talk about how much of a long shot that might be, but do you think that could be one of the outcomes of this?
Anything could. You could have a third term. If you have a constitutional convention that says we don't want to have term limits for the president, you could have a third term by President Trump, by President Obama, by President Bush. You could remove the requirement of birth within the United States and have a President Schwarzenegger.
Musk.
Or Musk. They can make whatever rules they want. And one of the interesting things in those who are supporting a constitutional convention is that when I've seen their literature, they're telling their supporters, we're only going to look at these three things. They would be limited in their authority. You can't do that. Hmm. And they could just as easily decide there's something fundamentally wrong with our legislature, because in the Senate, California, our most populous state, which tends to be liberal, has the same senatorial power as Wyoming. Texas, our second most populated state, has the same senatorial power as Vermont, and that might strike the representatives of the big states as ridiculous. On the other hand, the small states might be in favor of getting rid of the House of Representatives so that everyone is truly equal by state, however ridiculous economically that might be. We don't know.
Well, lots more to talk about. We're going to continue this conversation after a short break. And later in the program, we'll discuss the potential cuts and privatization of the U.S. Postal Service. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about the push for a convention of states to amend the U.S. Constitution. My guests are Northern Kentucky University Chase College of Law Associate Dean for Faculty Development and Professor of Law, John Bickers, and University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Political Science, David Niven. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. John, before our break, you were talking about how you've seen the literature about this convention of states. They talk about they want to limit it to three things. What are the three things that come up most commonly, or was that just kind of an example you were throwing out?
That was an example I was throwing out. I've seen balanced budget specifically. I've seen limitations on federal authority, a proposal even to allow states to negate federal laws, the nullification idea of the early 19th century. The people who are most in favor of it now, at least on the right politically, tend to be about limiting the federal government's power. There are a few people still on the left who I've seen advocating a convention, and they mostly are concerned about the Senate and the fact that it is an inherently undemocratic institution because of the imbalance of population between the states.
Well, you were talking about how California, our biggest state, has two representatives, just like teeny tiny states have two much less populated states have two representatives.
Two senators.
Yeah. David, before our break, early in our conversation, you talked about how even the question of how many states have called for this can be a controversial question. And I think you're talking about this theory that critics say is based on what people are calling fuzzy math, that states have already reached the threshold to have a convention of states. Talk about the idea behind that theory. Does it count on these requests that go back years and years?
It does. And part of what's complicated here is calling for a constitutional convention doesn't actually in any way create the agenda for that constitutional convention. So were a state to issue a call for a constitutional convention for a balanced budget amendment, for example, or for term limits, or for any particular purpose, there's nothing in the Constitution that suggests you can call a constitutional convention to debate one issue or to debate any specific, agenda. So then the question becomes, of course, well, if a state passed that, call for a constitutional convention 30 years ago, is that still an open and valid call for a constitutional convention? It seems logically not, that those legislators are largely not in office and that agenda is largely not what's being debated now. But there's no language in the Constitution. It doesn't say, for example, if two-thirds of the states issue a call within 6 months of each other, we'll have a convention. There's no date language or expiration date language, which is just another aspect of this not being entirely thought out or spelled out.
John, what's the legal theory behind that? Or is there a legal theory behind, a call for a convention of states maybe never expiring?
It's the same legal theory we have about a number of things like that in the Constitution. The most recently added constitutional amendment, which received the 3/4 of the states it needed in the late 1990s, was actually passed by Congress by a more than 2/3 majority with the original Bill of Rights. The original Bill of Rights was not 10, it was 12. One of those two, which limited when pay raises for members of the legislature could go into effect, just got ignored in the 1790s. A student discovered it and wrote a paper about it in the 1990s and then started writing to state legislators who said, hey, this is a good idea. And so because nothing said it couldn't happen, it did. It really comes down to what we as a people collectively will accept. And I think, and David probably knows this for certain, but I believe at least one of the old calls for convention that is relied upon in that professor's argument, which says we're already over 2/3, was maybe Wisconsin, but one of the states specifically responding to prohibition and seeking a convention to end prohibition. Well, that would seem to be overcome by events.
David, is that right? Is that prohibition?
Right. And so, then as a matter of logic, how could that possibly apply? But it is complicated by, just as John said, if expiration dates weren't written into these things, it really does make it difficult, and as he said, our most recent constitutional amendment exists because there was no expiration date and it had a, more than 200-year lifespan. But, it would seem ridiculous to assert that a legislature's call for a, pertinent issue would still stand. And then, again, there's no time limit. There's no language about, what if a state wants to rescind its call for a constitutional convention? So, we're kind of stuck with that. Bottom line is we don't have 2/3 of the states, which is 34 states, actively calling for a constitutional convention right now. But obviously, several Ohio legislators would like to add Ohio to that roster and move the bar, and move closer to that magic number.
ProPublica reported last month that a draft lawsuit is being shopped around by supporters of this idea in hopes that some attorneys general will file suit and, I guess, force Congress to call a convention of states based on that math that we've been talking about that some people refer to as fuzzy math. John, is that possible? I mean, I guess, you can sue anybody about anything, but...
You can. I suppose it's possible. I think, remember that on the other side of this convention, you have to get public popular approval. And if the only reason we're having a constitutional convention is because federal courts tell Congress you must order one on the basis of some very old, out of date, or even revoked calls for a convention, I think the popular mandate will not be there. And the reason the one worked in 1787 and upended the government was George Washington. We had a figure who united pretty broad sections of the American public. We haven't had someone like George Washington in a very long time. And I think if the best thing the convention desirers can do is get a federal court to force this sort of thing, I think it's doomed from the start.
Okay, so if a convention of states were to happen, and I know that's a big if, John, is there any branch of government that would have the power to veto the policies or changes that its delegates adopt, even if one is, hey, we can do this without, with a much lower threshold of approval from the public? Or is there anybody who would have any authority over that?
Unless we're talking about a military coup, no. If the American people, this convention were to come up with a rule that said conventions of 40 states are necessary to create this new government, and conventions are held in 40 states, and they don't approve, then it won't work. And if they do, then the other 10 will have to figure out whether they go along or start on their own.
David, the country is so divided right now. We've got millions of people worried about what the Trump administration is doing. We have millions of other people cheering what the administration is doing. Just politically, is now the right time to hold a convention of states?
It wouldn't be a great time to have to go out and win the support of 3/4 of the states, which is ultimately where any amendment proposal would go, whether it came through from the actions of Congress or it came through the actions of a convention. Not a great time for that. I mean, this, you know, probably one of the worst times, you know, in fact, to try and unite folks and unite states in common purpose like that. But in some sense, desperation is the fuel of these kinds of movements, and certainly desperation was how we got this Constitution in the first place, that the Articles of Confederation were so widely deemed to be a failure. So short answer to your question, if I actually wanted to see the Constitution changed right now, I would not be terribly optimistic about my prospects for getting any idea through 3/4 of the states.
What do you think, John? Is it a long shot?
I agree with David. I think it's beyond a long shot.
Okay. Well, it's been a fascinating conversation. I've been talking with Northern Kentucky University Chase College of Law Associate Dean for Faculty Development and Professor of Law, John Bickers, and University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Political Science, David Niven. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Up next, postal workers across the country have been rallying. We'll hear their concerns. This is Cincinnati Edition.